Welcome to Small Time Leaders, a 10-minute podcast about how giving credit to others can help you experience more success and meaning in your leadership and life. My name is Michael Allen Tate, but my friends call me Mike. I work with accomplished business people who want to design a personal strategy to make their next big move their best move. In each of my podcasts, you will hear a successful leader talk about a couple of people in their lives who did or said a small thing that was so on point and profound that it still impacts how they live and work today, which I've come to call small-time leader moments. Well, Susan, so glad to have you back and appreciate your sharing about your three teachers in our last episode. So before we begin, I would also like for you to tell us something you're especially thankful for in your life right now.
You know, I'm usually kind of like deep and philosophical and or I think I am anyway. But I want to share with you something that seems so mundane, but I'm so excited and grateful for it. A couple of months ago, my husband and I decided to start intermittent fasting. And I didn't think I was the kind of person that could fast. And so we've been doing it for months and I've lost 11 pounds and I feel so good. And he's lost over 25 pounds or something. And so it's just been, it's a combination of applying my work on motivation and really coming to understand what it means to be an intermittent faster. And it's not a diet. It's like a new way of life. And yeah, so I literally woke up this morning feeling literally lighter and really grateful for being lighter.
Well, congratulations. That's a big deal.
Yeah. It is.
You know, a couple of friends of mine are doing that intermittent fasting. That's interesting. Thanks for
it's fascinating. Yeah. It's fascinating.
Again, you told us about your teachers on our last episode. So who is that other, out of all the people in your life who have impacted you and did those small things, who's the next person you'll share with us and our listeners?
You know, I've kissed a lot of princes. And I've kissed a few frogs, but I ended up with a real prince of a guy. His name is Dr. Drea Zagarmi. He is my husband. And I hope I don't get too emotional, but I will say that he is the most profound influence. Yeah, he's been the most profound influence on my life, my thinking, and the quality of my experience on this planet.
Wow. Well, tell us a little bit about him and how you met this special guy and what he's done to make your life and maybe even your business better, I think.
Well, I really admired him because I knew him through my work. He is a founder of the Ken Blanchard Companies and really an amazing writer, researcher, and developer of training and leadership courses. And I wanted to have him as a mentor, and he really didn't know me from Adam. And so I went up to him one day after I saw him in a class and I said, Dr. Zagarmi, I'm thinking about getting my PhD. And I was wondering if you might counsel me and or maybe you could be my mentor. And he said, sure, come by my office at, you know, 3 o'clock tomorrow or whatever. So I went to his office and he hands me this stack of academic journal articles. And he says, why don't we begin by having you read this? And I said, okay. And that was kind of basically the meeting. And so I went back and I took those, and I had never read an academic journal article in my life. And so I'm trying to read through them and I go through and I'm underlining and writing questions. And I went back a couple of weeks later and I said, Dr. Zagarmi, I said, I probably just realized I'm not cut out for this because I tried reading these journal articles and I don't understand hardly anything I read. So for example, in this Ackerman article, you know, what does he mean by this? And I explained why it didn't make sense to me. And he just was staring at me. He just sat there staring at me. And I said, what? He goes, you actually read those articles? And I said, yeah. And he said, do you know how many people ask me to mentor them? I hand them that stack of articles and I never see them again.
What a great screening device for mentors who are way too busy.
Exactly. And so he was so impressed that I tried that we just started with that Ackerman article and started working through the articles. And ironically, it's really funny because I never got my PhD, but I got involved with research and I realized I am actually published in academic journals and people call me Dr. Fowler, even though I'm not. But Drea was the one that just opened my mind and was and taught me how to appreciate good research and how to appreciate, again, taking that critical thinking, but then applying it to things that were really applicable and useful and helpful to people. And, well, and then one thing led to another, and we fell in love and got married. And that's been 26 or 27 years ago.
Yeah. I don't think many people could say it. How did you meet? Well, I was handed a stack of academic articles to read, and that's...
And magic happened.
All right. So you've been married 26 years. What's that moment with your husband that...
And let me just clarify, we actually haven't been married for 26 years, but we've had that kind of a we've had a relationship for that long.
Sure.
You know, so I mentioned when we did our last interview that every once in a while, whenever I come up with something, because I have really strong opinions about things, and he'll listen, he's a great listener, and he'll say, so what proof do you have of that? Or, you know, why do you make that claim? And so he's always forcing me to be a critical thinker. But one day we were just talking, and I was saying, you know, that I was so grateful that I have two stepdaughters, Drea's two girls, and now we have four granddaughters. And I was just so grateful to have them in my life. And I said, you know, there's a part of me that regrets not having my own children as much as I love our grandchildren, especially as if they were my own. And I said, I just feel like I would like to have given, you know, left something behind for the world. And he said, Susan, there's so many different ways to give back to the world. He says, what is it that you want to give back? What's the penny you want to leave the world? And it was just a saying, but there was something so tangible about it. And I said to him in that moment, I want to be able to take the research around motivation, the science of motivation, and I want to be the person that translates it and makes it most usable for people so that it can really change the quality of their life and their life experience. He said, well, that's your penny then. And that shifted. Something in me shifted in that moment. And I dedicated my life in that moment to knowing as much as I could about the motivation science and then being a translator. And so in my first book on motivation, it wasn't my first book, but my first book on motivation, which is called Why Motivating People Doesn't Work and What Does, if you open it up, the dedication is simply the picture of a penny with the words for Drea. So the book was in honor of him setting me on my path, you know, really helping me to understand that a path was possible and it was tangible and it was doable.
Wow, that is. And you showed me the book with the penny in it when we talked. Yes. What a special gift, and what an insightful guy. So that's your penny to the world. And so how does that apply and come across in your work with organizations or leaders that you're working with? How do you apply this principle that he shared with you about the penny?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I've learned is that I don't think we can make people feel guilty for not having a life purpose. And that, you know, it sounds a little ironic, but I know that through motivation science, that whenever you have a clear purpose and when you can align whatever it is you're doing to that purpose, you're more likely to experience what's called optimal motivation. But the pressure to have that purpose, or sometimes people have a purpose that's not a noble purpose. Sometimes people have a purpose that actually goes against not only their self-interest, but can be harmful to others. And so I think sometimes this concept of purpose has gotten really mangled. And so one of the things that I think he taught me, or at least I was able to glean as a result of his question of you know, what do you want your penny to be that you leave the world, was more around legacy. And whenever you think about legacy, it's more other-focused. It's more about what do I hope for others? What difference do I hope that I've made to help make the world a better place? And motivation science says that you cannot be optimally motivated if you are not contributing to the greater good. If you do not have a sense of connection to all, to the entire community. So this whole thing of tribes and tribalism and, you know, inclusive and exclusivity, we may feel like we belong because we belong to a tribe, but I just wrote this whole piece about this, but it's actually undermining our capacity to be connected. And so I think more than even having this, you know, idea of purpose, what we need to do is really think about self-identity and what do I identify with as the way I make a contribution to the world. So when he didn't say, Susan, what's your life purpose? He didn't say, you know, Susan, what do you want to do that's going to just be self-serving? Instead, he says, how do you identify? And I identified myself as a speaker, a writer, a researcher. But then he said, what's your penny? What is it you want to give? And so I realized I wanted to make a difference in people's lives. That's become my purpose, but it was because of wanting to make a contribution to the greater good. I don't know if that made any sense. I haven't spent a lot of time articulating that, but I think that's a really important point. A purpose needs to be a noble purpose, and it cannot be self-serving. It needs to reflect who you are as an individual, but it also needs to contribute to the greater good.
Wow. Thanks so much for sharing your heart and your story and your penny and challenging us to think of those two questions. What's my identity and what is the penny I give? Susan, hate to end. I wish we could talk the rest of the day, but we do need to come to an end here. As we close, I'd like for you to just share with our listeners how they can be in touch with you and if they'd like to speak with you.
Thank you so much, Michael, for this opportunity. And if you go to my website, which is just www.susanfowler.com, there's actually a free motivation survey that people can take, and they get some really good information, I think, about their own motivation. And then all of my books and blogs and videos and all that kind of stuff are there on the website.
Right. And all that will be in our show notes. So it'll be handy just to click on and find Susan. Susan, thanks so much again. And have a great weekend, and we'll speak in the future.
Thank you so much, Michael. I am grateful, and especially for being able to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I'd like to leave you with a thought. I believe that we live in a small world that often feels out of control. But I also believe there is a big God who is in control and who speaks to us in a still, small voice. And if we just listen, we may be granted the occasion to make a positive difference in someone's life. So I challenge you to be a small-time leader today and help someone see themselves in a brand new way. Thanks again for listening to this podcast. For more information about my firm, blog, products, today's special guest, please go to michaelallentate.com or smalltimeleaders.com. And don't forget to subscribe to the Small Time Leader podcast so you never miss an episode. And join our Facebook group for more exclusive content. I'll see you on the next episode of Small Time Leaders.